Well, good morning, Kingsville. We're so glad that you're here this morning. And if you're joining us online, thanks for tuning in. My name's Luke, and you guys are going to have to bear with me this morning because I don't have my emotional support guitar over there to block any kind of stress or anxiety that I'm feeling this morning. But when Charles told me he was going to be gone this week, he asked if I would share my testimony with you guys. And so I just want to talk about healing and restoration with you guys for the next little bit. Through my story and my testimony, I grew up in a very rural part of North Carolina. It's right smack dab in the middle of the state, a little town called Seagrove. It's one of those one stoplight towns where you're driving down the interstate and whoop, there it goes, it's gone. As quaint and cute as Seagrove sounds, nowhere near the sea, nowhere near any kind of grove. And until last week when I was prepping for this, I didn't know that it was actually named for the guy who built the railroad through Seagrove. His name was actually Seagraves. You can see kind of a predicament here. The town is called Seagrove. His name was Seagraves. Come to find out, the story goes that the guy who was writing the sign for Seagrove, one, he misspelled, and he put Seagrove, and then he ran out of paint, supposedly, and left it as Seagrove. So there it is. Nowhere near the sea, nowhere near Grove, but a ton of farmland. Hog farms, chicken farms. I grew up riding four-wheelers with my brother, getting muddy in the cow pasture. Him pushing me over into a pile of briars and beating up on me. And we live kind of 30 minutes from anything. So 30 minutes from Walmart, 30 minutes to a grocery store. You need to get gas. It's like 20 minutes, so you better have gas. And I grew up coming to visit an uncle who lives here in Northwood Hills. And we used to get so excited about going to Steak and Shake. That was like our, you know, if we're going to Atlanta, we better be going to Steak and Shake. And no diss to Steak and Shake. It's a fine establishment, but I'm sure, as you guys know, Atlanta has a lot better places to offer. but both of my parents were educators. My mom was a kindergarten teacher. My dad was a high school science and math teacher. My grandfather was also an educator himself. He was kind of a bivocational minister. He preached on Sundays at a church, a small Southern Baptist church, and then he taught at a community college during the week. And so I kind of grew up just always going to church. Every time the door was open, I was there with my dad or my mom. Wednesday nights, I was there during the week because my dad worked there. And so just like it was woven into the fabric of my existence. To this day, and the church community that I grew up in was very conservative, very small town, evangelical, conservative church, and every year we would host this play. Some of you actually might be familiar with this. It's called Heaven's Gates and Hell's Flames, and so you have these people come and kind of coach you on drama, and every scene in the play is kind of the last 5 minutes of someone's life, you know, construction worker working, someone in the hospital, someone driving down the road, and then they die, and depending on whether they said the sinner's prayer or not, they go to heaven or they go to hell, and it's a very dramatic, scary, frightening scene if they go to hell, very angelic and awesome if they go to heaven, and so as a five-year-old, six-year-old kid, I kind of had the inside scoop on, you know, watching them rehearse, and because of this play, watching it every year in, year out, I probably said the sinner's prayer probably every year. It was just like, okay, this is the time I'm going to give my life to Christ again. I'm going to say this prayer, make sure I don't go to that scary, dramatized place that just they showed as hell. So I kind of had this concept that salvation was only a thing that was going to keep me from hell. And that's just kind of what I thought, understood that church was for. I didn't really quite think as a kid, what is church going to do for me? What is God's salvation going to do for me throughout my life? Sure, people talked about God's love and that kind of thing, but all I saw was a scary place called hell that I didn't want to go to. And then in October of 2000, my mom, I was in fourth, fifth grade, was diagnosed with breast cancer. And at this time, I had no kind of concept of what cancer was. Sure, people had said the word cancer at school. I knew it was a disease, it was a sickness. But I had no clue the impact, devastation it was going to have on my life, my family's life, my future. And she had to stop teaching because she started chemo treatment. She started radiation. She got sick and lost her hair. Her skin turned yellow. After school, I would get out of school and someone would pick me up and take me, drop me off at the clinic. I would sit with my mom during her treatment sometimes, and just saw her in a state that, you know, probably a kid shouldn't see their parent, but that was the reality that we lived in. And my dad was a youth pastor at our church during this time. He started being a youth pastor when I was younger. And we had all kinds of people who would come and pray for her. They would anoint her with oil. They would speak over her in tongues. Do all kinds of stuff. You name it, they tried it. We had those people who were well-meaning. Then we had people who were kind of on the other end of the spectrum who would come over to my house and talk to my dad and mom about how my mom had some unrepented sin in her life. And that's why she was sick, which didn't quite calculate to me as a 9-year-old kid at this time, because all I saw was my mom was a kindergarten teacher who loved on kids, taught them how to read, taught them how to learn. Everybody says the most important year of education is kindergarten, and that's what she did. So that I didn't quite calculate with what I thought church and God's love was about. But anyway, my mom, she kept on getting sick and continued with treatment, and we kind of reached this point where they tried everything they could do for her type of cancer. It was actually a very rare, aggressive form of breast cancer, and the doctor said, hey, we've scanned and ran tests, and right now we don't see any evidence of cancer in her body. And maybe, the next couple months we'll just kind of monitor and assess the situation as it goes on. And so my dad, being kind of the YOLO guy he is, he was like, we're going to Hawaii. Going from Seagrove, North Carolina, to Hawaii. And it was just, amazing trip from our family. It was one of the best moments of my memories that I have of my mom and my dad and my brother. There's this old picture of us on this catamaran somewhere, in the Pacific. My mom's jokingly behind the steering wheel, and she's got this beautiful hat that she used to wear to cover her bald head. And it's just one of my favorite pictures of her, and it just cherished that memory. So we came back from Hawaii, and the doctors ran some tests and scanned, and they said, hey, because your cancer was so aggressive, it was so rare, we kind of just threw everything at it and just to see what would stick. And come to find out, whatever we did kind of just masked and hid the growth of cancer inside your body. So now you have cancer in your brain, you've got cancer in your lungs, you've got cancer in your colon, and you have about 6 months to live. And so my mom, they tried to do some radiation, chemotherapy. But after, several months of that, she lost her battle with cancer in January 2002. And so actually last Thursday was the 20th year anniversary of losing her. And as I was kind of reflecting on that this week, the doctors had always told our family, hey, your mom actually, she did have a miracle in her life, and that was that she lived as long as she did. She had probably about 6 months is what we thought when she first diagnosed, but she was able to live for 2 years with cancer. And after her passing, just to kind of add to the craziness of my preteen existence, my dad decided to remarry 6 months later. To someone who also had lost their husband in kind of a freak four-wheeling accident. And so within a single year, and I kind of joked, there's probably some middle schoolers in this room, but middle school is a hard time. So if you have a middle schooler, show them extra love and care, because I really empathize and I identify with middle schoolers when I talk about this story. But I started seventh grade, and my mom passed away from cancer, and then my dad remarried, and then all of a sudden I have three stepsisters under the age of eight. So it was a very kind of confusing, very tumultuous, angry time in my life. And spiritually, I was super confused because, as I had said previously, I kind of had this concept of salvation. It's only escaping hell. But honestly, as a 12, 13-year-old kid, what I was experiencing in my life felt pretty hellish. It felt pretty awful. And no one had kind of talked to me about that. And it wasn't until a couple months later, I was at a summer camp. My dad took us to summer camp, kind of a Southern Baptist Southern camp every summer. And one of the pastors had kind of talked about something that I'd never quite heard before at church. And he said, you know, we all worship something or someone. And when we go through hard times in life, that is what we're going to turn to. That is what we're going to draw strength from. So you kind of have a choice today. Is it going to be God and his presence and his hope for your life? Or is it going to be X other thing over here, whether that's, you know, your career or your family or drugs or whatever? You kind of have a choice here throughout your life. And so for some reason, maybe I'd heard that before, but for some reason, it kind of really resonated with me that summer. And it was just kind of a turning point in my life where I thought, that is what salvation is for. That is what God's hopes for. It's not for, it is to get us out of hell and to enjoy eternity with him. But we're going to face things throughout life that we're not going to understand. And that's what God's presence and his hope for is for in our life. And my mom loved to sing. She, you know, was kind of a, I probably thought she was the greatest singer in the world, and to me she was. But when she was sick, she would love to sing. It was kind of a therapy for her. And late 90s, early 2000s, I don't know if you guys were on the pulse of Christian radio at that time, but that was like the peak of like CCM radio, or kind of the start dawn of CCM radio. And some of those songs, she just loved to, you know, belt out in the car, and it just gave her so much hope and comfort. And so when I heard her sing, I would just sing along with her. And so I guess she thought, oh, Luke might be musical. So they put me in choir. My dad bought me a guitar. He like loves 70s rock. I joke with him that he's been listening to the same 300 songs for the past 30 years. But so he bought me a guitar and put me in guitar lessons, and I quit. They put me in piano lessons, and I quit. My mom sang, and so I was like, I want to be a singer. And in high school, I started leading worship and kind of stumbling through some of those chords that I learned in guitar, and kind of connected guitar and singing, and just started leading worship. And so when I graduated high school, the only logical conclusion that I could come to study was, I want to study music, or I want to be in the music business. So I went to Middle Tennessee State University and studied music, and loved every semester, loved every class. Just really ate it up and consumed everything I could about music. Studied classical voice and did all like musical theater, opera, tried it all. And then I graduated. I didn't quite calculate that I was graduating with a music degree in Middle Tennessee. And if you don't know anything about Middle Tennessee, there are a lot of musicians and singers in Middle Tennessee. It's quite the thing to do there. So the only logical thing that I could think of was, I guess I'll just do what everybody else is doing, my friends are doing. Let's move to Nashville. Let's try to be a singer-songwriter. Let's try to be a worship leader of some kind. And like probably 95-98% of those people who do that, I ended up working odd-end jobs. I bus tables at a diner that had some really cool, like, Captain Crunch French toast. It was amazing. And then I worked at a bakery as well that had jalapeno cheddar bread. I don't know if you guys have had jalapeno cheddar bread. It is life-changing. And then I worked at Lifeway Christian Resources, answering phones for the people who were ordering Bible studies and Sunday school materials. And Hello, this is Lifeway Christian Resources. This is Luke. How may I help you today? And, you know, they go down the line and give me the number they want to order. That was me. And so it was starving artist doesn't quite describe my existence because I was nowhere near an artist because I was spending way too much time trying not to starve. I had a friend and mentor in high school, really dear friend to me, who just called me up one day and said, "Hey, I know you have a music degree, like everyone else in Nashville. Would you like to go teach music at a school in China?" And I probably got this call after a day at the bakery, a day at bussing tables, where I'm covered in all kinds of stuff, who knows what. And just kind of looking at myself well, probably anything is better than what I'm doing right now. And because my mom died at 42, since her death and kind of in my teens and early 20s, I just kind of had this, if this is the only life I'm going to get, what can I try? And where is life going to take me if I don't have that long to live? Because my concept was my mom died at 42. If that's the case for me, that probably won't be my reality. But if it is, what will happen if I take a risk or a chance on doing something different? And so when I got that phone call, I thought, let's give it a try. And if it's horrible, I'll just come back. So I moved from Nashville to southeast China, a little town called Dongguan. It's actually, hopefully no one in here is from Dongguan, but it is, to me, it's kind of the armpit of China. It's where all the factories are. I saw this article a couple years ago that all the toys from the London Olympics are made there. So it kind of gives you the idea of the kind of place. Very industrial, but it actually turned out to be one of the best experiences of my life. Within 2 weeks of being there, I met my wife, Rachel, who was also teaching there, and we just hit it off, and we became just best friends, and probably haven't spent more than a week apart from each other since then. We ended up getting married over there, and I just fell in love with education and teaching people, and I fell in love with different cultures and understanding different things about the world that maybe I hadn't experienced in tiny little Seagrove. I did a master's program in education over there, and it just kind of came to a crossroad of what I was going to do, what we were going to do as a family. And Hong Kong is number one or number two for the most expensive places to live in the world. We had a 300 square foot apartment that we lived in, our first apartment together. And so we kind of made the logical conclusion, this is not probably the best fiscal decision to stay here. So we both got jobs back in Nashville, different jobs this time, not bakery jobs. Rachel taught kindergarten and I taught at a high school. Shortly after being there, back in Nashville, I had a lot of connections with different people at the school who did different music things. And I had a friend who was a music teacher there at the school. He asked me to lead worship for this ministry called Celebrate Recovery. And if you don't know anything about Celebrate Recovery, it's kind of a Christian 12-step program, helping people through addiction or hurts and habits and hang-ups that they might have in their life. And and when he asked me to do it, I said, sure, yeah, absolutely, I'll do it. And so it was every Friday night. It was kind of a different alternative for people who might want to go to a bar, or they might want to go out to a club or something, invite them to Celebrate Recovery and just have community there. And I was so inspired by the way these people worshiped with such authenticity, such earnestness, because they truly were broken and they wanted to be restored. And as I spent time with them and kind of heard their stories, I just realized how much of us have hurts, have habits, and have hang-ups in life. As Christians, sometimes I think we have this flawed perception of coming to church or the church in general, just broadly, that we have to be perfect, that we have to be free from problems or free from mistakes, and that is totally not the case. There's a verse in Mark that says, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick, I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." And that verse just kind of makes me think about, we are all works in progress. We are all in restoration every day, every minute, by believing in his salvation and grace for us. That's what restores us. And as a worship leader, I've kind of learned throughout my time leading worship that there are certain songs that I've come across that I'm like, oh, that's a great song that resonates with me, with my life, my experiences, and I can sing that with a certain feeling that I think will connect with the people who I'm trying to lead in worship. And then there are other songs that I've kind of come across, and maybe the theological statement that it's trying to make or the meaning of the song, it doesn't quite sit well with me, and it kind of agitates at me. And at Celebrate Recovery, they love to sing this worship song called Healer. And it was kind of one of our anthems that we would sing every week. And it really bothered me when I would sing this song because God didn't heal my mom from cancer. And so when I'm singing this song, all I can think about was, yes, God is our healer, but why didn't he heal my mom? And one night as we were singing this, it just dawned on me, and I realized that God might not have healed my mom, but he was continuing to restore and heal me through that loss over the years, through relationships with people, godly people who loved on me and cared for me, through trusting in him. And so whatever we're going through in life, no matter how big or small, maybe it's just like a problem you're having at work or problem you're having with a family member, the only thing that's going to get us through is God's presence and trusting in him. I don't know if you're like me, but I've gone through a lot of times in life where I have no clue why that particular situation is happening. We kind of look up at God and we're like, what? And there's this verse in Isaiah, it says, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. God is at work in so many mysterious ways that we don't see or understand. And he's going to send people along our path, along our journey, to heal and restore us from whatever we're going through. We just have to realize that and acknowledge his presence and guide us through those dark times. It's okay with you guys. I was going to sing Healer, and I want to challenge you guys as I sing to maybe reflect and think about a time, it's something that's going on in your life or something that you need healing or restoration from. It doesn't have to be, this huge traumatic experience that you had in the past. Maybe it is, or maybe you haven't had that, but we're all going through something. What can we draw strength and healing and restoration from God through today?